There are times when we have to realize that what passes for public discourse in our political system frequently breaks down to the essence of arguments between seven-year-olds. One side says, it's true, and the other side says, no, it's not. Yes, it is. No, it's not. And on we go. The media frequently end up in the middle of this, and in the gaze of our next guest, Brooke Gladstone is the co-host and executive producer of On the Media on Public Radio, heard here on the News and Information Service Sunday morning at 8. She's the author of a new small book called The Trouble with Reality, a rumination on moral panic in our time. Brooke, so good to have you here on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks for inviting me.
So you make Philip K. Dick fans happy in the front of the book with his thoughts on reality and make-believe. It is my job to create universes, and I have to build them in such a way that they do not fall apart 2 days later. Ever in your years in this business watch stories get set up and destroyed so fast as now in the Trump White House?
Yeah, no, exactly. There isn't. The implied answer to that is, how could it be faster than it is now? In fact, even the phrase fake news, which actually meant something, was almost immediately co-opted and transmuted into something else. So it's the basic vocabulary we use to refer to things has been undermined by the tidal change in reality that seems to be going on perpetually, really since the campaign. Actually, since the Bush administration, to some degree. I mean, all administrations lie. Mm-hmm. But the difference is that in the Bush administration, it is in what is widely accepted to have been the creation of an alternate reality in the run-up to the invasion of Iraq in order to convince the public that invading Iraq was a good idea, weapons of mass destruction and so on that didn't exist. All of that reality building was for the purpose of a single goal, and it was consistent. And Karl Rove, or the source that was later to be revealed to be Karl Rove, told a New York Times reporter, Ron Suskind at the time, we create alternative realities. You in the, quote, reality-based community just have to deal with it. The difference between, say, what happened during the Bush administration and now is that Trump doesn't want to create an alternate reality. He wants to explode the idea that there is one, or that it is knowable, or that there is anybody you can trust to actually tell you about it. By doing that, he can assert control over truth itself.
To what end, though? I mean, because there are lots of people who will say that sort of behavior leads toward dictatorship, and I'm, you know, obviously not everybody's convinced, not even close to everybody.
Yeah, no, it's really hard to discern if there's a larger plan here or whether he was just the right man at the right time in our increasingly polarized culture to come in with techniques that he just took directly from his business career and apply them to campaigning. You know, campaigning is the same as selling, right? Governing is something altogether different. Some people could see what was going on. Many of us liberals think didn't see it, probably did see it and just didn't care. They had felt lied to and unserved by the system as it was and didn't mind seeing it exploded for at least a while to see if anything would redound to their benefit. He certainly said he recognized them and their grievances. He certainly said that he would work to help remedy them. You know, why not believe this guy, because all the traditional people have come every 4 years, said the same thing, disappeared, didn't come back for another 4 years.
Well, that's a really interesting part of this part of history, though, the idea that there were a fair number of people across the political spectrum who really thought this was like setting a bomb off in the system that they thought had become too calcified to be able to get anything accomplished. But it's destruction, but is it creative destruction?
Well, yeah, I think that was the hope, that it would be creative destruction. I spoke to Noah Rothman recently, who writes for the conservative journal, The Commentary, who talks, you know, about creative destruction, creative creation, destructive destruction and destructive, and so on. And, you know, there was some hope that there would be some creative destruction. So far, it just seems to be, at least through my eyes, destructive destruction, but a lot of people don't think so. I mean, Noah Rothman, who is not a fan of Trump, still likes his cabinet appointments, still, you know, still likes a lot of his cuts. So they just hoped that he can advance the conservative agenda, you know, somehow. But he's so quick to distract attention from legislation that none of it gets passed, and so they're quite frustrated on the right.
Brooke Gladstone is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She is the co-host and managing editor of On the Media on Public Radio, heard here on the News and Information Service Sunday mornings at 8. You can join our conversation about her new book called The Trouble with Reality, A Rumination on the Moral Panic in Our Time. I added the. It's a rumination on moral panic in our time.
Everybody does.
Oh, good. I'm not alone. 800-838-3760. If you'd like to join the conversation by phone, we'll take your emails at jx@jeffnet.org. So let's go from creators to perceivers. And in this case, we're talking about us, because here in society, the people not directly part of the political process are prone to getting into bubbles ourselves. And you point this out. They're not new in society, are they?
No. In fact, the whole argument... You know, as you say, this is a little book. It's more of an argument or a treatise or a pamphlet, I humbly submit, in the
okay.
Tom Paine common sense sense of the word. But in any case, what this little book argues at the beginning is that we're wired to create bubbles. We have to create them. It is a biological necessity, and that... You know, even our senses are far more engaged in filtering out extraneous information than it is integrating it. And this continues throughout every way we perceive the world. We live on a web of beliefs, and if any one of them is threatened, that threatens our universe. We have to protect them all, and when we can't, then any alteration we make has to leave the rest intact. And what I say, the panic that I'm referring to, is the sense among many in the country that it isn't just an unfavorable outcome in an election that, you know, half the country was upset about. It isn't the president that we fear won't be able to do the job. Anybody who lives long enough will have that happen to them many times. What it is far beyond politics. What it is existential. A sense that the world that you thought you knew, the world that you thought you lived in, isn't what you believed it to be. In other words, I believe that the panic is based on our shake-up in reality. You know, the trouble with reality is a little bit of a, it means two things. First, that there is a problem with the notion, and second, that it is, in fact, in trouble as we experience it. And that's why people, rather than just being annoyed at the results of this election, those who are, you know, find themselves sitting up bolt upright in their beds in the middle of the night with this kind of creepy crawly sensation that things are moving way out of control. And that's what I seek to explain, how we construct our bubbles, why they exist. The world is too complex to comprehend or to move through without these bubbles. What happens when all of these different realities crash up, you know, just smash against each other in a multi-reality pile-up? And then ultimately, how do you reconstruct your reality, paste it together along more durable lines? Otherwise, this could happen to you again. Better that you should know what the world is out there. You know, I think people think I'm saying, oh, listen, understand, hands across the sea. I know how difficult that is. What I am advocating is pay attention, look over the walls of your bubble so that you can understand why this happened, and you'll be prepared for the next time.
Understand what other people are thinking, certainly, yes. The small book is called The Trouble with Reality, A Rumination on Moral Panic in Our Time. Brooke Gladstone from WNYC's On the Media is the author of the book. You include some details of an interview with Drew Reston, who performed a fMRI, functional MRI scans, on voters confronted with candidate statements that show lying or pandering. How did their brains react?
Oh, yeah. I love that. It happened in, what, was 2007? I don't have the book ahead, but it's 2006 or 2007. He's a university professor. What he did is he hooked up a bunch of partisans to fMRIs to see what was happening to their brains in real time, Republicans and Democrats. And then they tested them. I'll explain it really quickly. What happened is that they would have three people lying. One would be somebody from the opposite party, someone from the same party, and then a neutral person, you know, who... Mm-hmm. Now, so what happened is that with the person from the opposite party lying, or with the neutral person, the reasoning parts of the brain lit up first, things were resolved fairly quickly, they got that they were lying, and this, you know, this was a very simple process. What happened when the person of their own party lied, or somebody that they favored, was that their reasoning sections stayed dark, and what lit up was something called the anterior cingulate, which is about, you know, just about conflict, a sense of anxiety, what he called a sort of lost in space, danger Will Robinson kind of sensation. And then, once they had figured out a way around it, once they'd figured out that what their guy said wasn't so bad, or really wasn't a lie, or maybe he meant it this way, or this is the context in which he's, whatever he could do, they got a shot of dopamine. In other words, when they lied to themselves successfully, they got dopamine, the same thing you get when you take cocaine. That is how wired we are to lie.
So we reward
ourselves.
Our brains reward ourselves for sticking to our guns even when we're wrong.
Exactly. And that's the point. He said that the reasoning sections of your brain never lit up at all when trying to reconcile the dicey remarks of your own partisan. It's, you know, this is what we're up against. We are up against our blood, our bones, our brain chemistry. But that doesn't mean we have to be slaves to it. In fact, I believe that, you know, with enough awareness and enough attention, we can transcend it, at least from time to time, you know? But right now, we're so dug in. You know, if you think that Trump said, you know, Trump's speech, there were a lot of problems with Trump's speech in the Middle East. I think that people on all sides can more or less agree he didn't get all of that right. But he didn't get absolutely every bit of it wrong either, and it's almost unbearable if you if you fear and hate Trump to concede that he might have gotten something right. You think, well, is that going to help if I weaken? And I'm just saying that you don't have to weaken if you look clear-eyed at the world. You still can be thoroughly right and see things without those kinds of filters. You know, it doesn't have to compromise your principles, your beliefs, your traditions, your entire worldview. You don't have to fear, but we do fear, so we close our eyes.
I want to get into some of the history of media in the country that you provide in the book, because I was surprised to find that James Fenimore Cooper, back in, what was it, the 1830s, was complaining about media sensationalism?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, his view was that, you know, here we had the founding fathers really believed in that a free speech and a free press was necessary to keep the our representative democracy strong, create an informed electorate. And what he said, when he'd lived in Europe for a few years, he came back and said, well, the great debates that had characterized our press had been over a long time, and now they were just into making money, titillating people, feeding people, you know, bottom feeding in order to keep, you know, audiences there, and basically we're serving a sense they were serving the great master of mischief in their regard and would bring doom upon us. The great master of mischief, I believe, was the pseudonym for the devil.
We have an email here from Tina in Eugene. Says, thank you for Brooke, a treasure. We're looking at Trump, but we ignore the cabal that surrounds him and their agenda.
Well, and the thing is that the cabal that surrounds him and their agenda are also in disarray, because Trump turns out, you know, whatever you may think of him, is not, you know, he may be mad, as some say, or not, but he is not a puppet. And he is not a mannequin, and there isn't somebody who can pull his strings and get him to say. They may get him to say something like, "Oh, I welcome this investigation. I want it to be over as soon as possible. The American public needs to know the truth." But then he'll immediately undercut his own prepared statement on Twitter, calling it a witch hunt. And you know, there's just a million examples of this kind of thing. So, you know, there is a cabal in the sense that there are different constituencies trying to manipulate Trump, and he doesn't seem to have any real ideology of his own. He just wants to be praised and liked, as far as anybody can tell. I mean, if you line up all of his various contradictory remarks, they're really all about currying favor with his base, or with the, in, you know, intelligentsia over at the New York Times when he is so inclined, or with the evangelicals, or with the Saudis, or with the, you know, with the Israelis. It doesn't seem to matter. The Chinese, the Russians, clearly. You know, there may be a financial part of this, which until we get our, you know, eye on the tax returns, we won't know. But fundamentally, the cabal that your listener writes about, whether Bannon or Priebus or Kushner or the Republican majority in Congress, they're all different, and they can't. This is why they can't get anything done.
Brooke Gladstone, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, co-host and managing editor of On the Media from WNYC that airs here on the News and Information Service on Sunday mornings. Her new little book, 87 pages, is called The Trouble with Reality, A Rumination on Moral Panic in Our Time. You write of the 2016 campaign that the facts mattered less than the fear-induced patterns that resonated with the worldview of so many, which I'm thinking really shouldn't surprise anybody. I mean, the case can be made that local TV news and cheap newspapers before that got rich by focusing on every incident of violent crime while seldom providing an overall context.
That is true. The media certainly did not help, and most people did get most of their news from local television, and local television just follows wherever the, you know, the police lines are and the chalk on the sidewalk. So, yeah, I mean, if it bleeds, it leads is not a joke. It's just a rhyming truth. But the fact is, it isn't just that news that, you know, that scares you. Bad news is much more addictive and much more attractive than news that isn't. It's that these people felt that the mainstream media in general didn't reflect the sense of fear that they felt, that their nation was slipping away, that their birthrights were slipping away, that the kind of life that they had known was no longer possible to them and couldn't be passed on to their kids. This, it's not that they were poor. I mean, the average income of a Trump voter was higher than that of a Hillary voter. So it isn't about that. It's more about city and country and whether you're comfortable with the changing demographics of the country and whether we can do something about the income inequality and the eroding industrial base. I mean, these are the real problems. For these people, though, they just represent invasion and fear and abandonment and loss. And they weren't, you know, so Trump comes and says, "I agree with you. And I know who's to blame. The person to blame is the woman who comes from Mexico, pregnant, has a baby, and then we support him for 85 years. This is literally something that he said. But actually, anybody can pull out of their hats any number of shocking things that he said along these lines. And so they go, right, that's it. okay, so now we have that. What are our values? You know, and he will explain what those values are. This idea I got from Jason Stanley, who was writing about it in the New York Times blog, The Stone, if you want to look it up. One good thing about the book is that there's a bunch of source material at the end. This is a very condensed argument, but at the end you can see where, you know, where I got a lot of this stuff and why I sort of wove it together in this way. So fundamentally, the people had their own reality. It was supplied by Trump, enemies, villains, a narrative. He recognized them. He validated them. And he said, you know the system is rigged. I know the system is rigged. I will rig this system for you for once.
So, in the minute and a half we have left...
I'm sorry, I talk very fast.
How do we begin to repair divisions and find common ground when there's a presumption of lying directed at the people with whom we disagree politically? I mean, when every move is suspect, what move do you make first?
I know. It's going to be very slow. I think that, you know, at this point, something that Hannah Arendt said was that ultimately real life catches up with the liar. And even those who lie to ourselves. So it may be that some people will simply have to see whether or not the Trump program, as it were, actually does improve their lives. I believe that it won't. But I think that seeing ultimately will be believing for a lot of those people, at least some of them. Some of them are seeing already that, you know, on health care and elsewhere. So that's the beginning. And then the rest of us simply have to start reading and listening to outside our bubble to see what's going on out there.
To hear what people who we disagree with are saying and try to get to the heart of why they're saying it.
Yeah. It'll help us with our realities.
All right. Brooke Gladstone is the co-host and managing editor of On the Media. You can hear it on Sunday mornings at 8 here on the News and Information Service of JPR. And she's the author of a new little book called The Trouble with Reality, A Rumination on Moral Panic in Our Time. Brooke, a great pleasure. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.